Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
Welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. St. Patrick's Day is just around the corner, so why not talk about a film that's celebrating 30 years? Leprechaun 2, to go with last year's St. Patrick's Day when we celebrated 30 years of Leprechaun 1. What a turnaround for this franchise. And we've got a great guest with us today. He directed at least two documentaries that I've seen and adored. He has another one on the horizon that I can't wait for. And he's here to talk about an Indiegogo campaign he's got for yet another public domain gone evil film that he's working on. But this one seems a little bit more tongue-in-cheek and a little less mean than, say, a Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. Taylor Borden, thank you so much for joining us here at Horror Movie Night.
Thank you for having me. What a fun intro. Do we do tiny claps on this podcast?
For now.
No. You can't clap for yourself. That's the only rule we have.
Yeah, you can give tiny claps when you say something funny to let us know that we did a good job. So this was kind of assigned to you, so I don't know if there's an apology here or not, but I'll tell you that as someone who's watched a lot of Leprechaun movies, I still think this is probably the best or second best one.
Second best.
Because it's not a great franchise, all in all.
I can tell you it's the best one I've seen.
Is it the only one you've seen?
It is. It is.
Well, how did you understand any of what was going on?
My first note, I took notes watching this last night. My first note is,
good boy,
I think I've missed so much in Leprechaun 1. I have no idea. And then they slowly explain the lore, but like, you just go into it cold.
He's a killer
leprechaun.
That's all the lore that they have.
Leprechaun 1 wouldn't have helped you because this fucking franchise changes the lore of the leprechaun every movie.
Every
single movie, it's a new thing. The first movie, it's all about him trying to get his lucky charm that he has and one gold coin. That one plus to seeing the first one, Francis from Pee Wee Herman is your hero in that movie.
Well, that's fun.
Well, this was my problem with the last time that we had talked about it. And I was hoping that maybe there was a little bit of connection, but you're right. They just totally changed the lore, which is fine, because this lore I had more fun with. I had more fun with, it's his birthday every 1,000 years, which doesn't make any...
dog years, leprechaun years.
It's leap year. And bro, guess what this year is? It's fucking leap year.
It's a leap year. But then he spoils his own... Well, I guess we should maybe for the uninitiated, as Scott would say. basically, the leprechaun is going to take his bride, finally, after 1,000 years, it's St. Patrick's Day, which is the leprechaun's birthday, but it's in 1,000-year increments, and he's going to get his bride because she's going to sneeze 3 times, and nobody's going to say bless you, but if somebody says God bless you, then the marriage is ruined, and he brings he brings his slave along for the ride, which, because he's a
who has the most realistic beard I've ever seen on an actor in my
life. Man, that beard is good.
Yeah, yeah. For 1,000 years ago beard.
When I was a child, my favorite costume that I did for Halloween was a pirate. And my beard looked just like I was 7.
Just a Sharpie dabbed across your face a couple times.
Yes, yes. And the second thing I got to say is that the best band name for such a fucking mediocre band was this band, and I hope to God they don't listen to this podcast. They were called 7 Year Dungeon Beard, which is the sickest metal band name. Actually, we were playing with Black Dahlia Murder one time. Both our bands were playing with Black Dahlia in Cleveland, and Trevor Strand, the now deceased singer of the band, was like, yo, did you guys see 7 Year Dungeon Beard play earlier? Man, that's the best band name I never thought of. And so it's this is like 1,000-year dungeon beard for this guy. But no, I actually think that the quote-unquote enslaved man, I'm gonna guess that the idea is that he's a shitbag too, and that he got caught up in the machinations of the leprechaun. I'm guessing that he's a shithead anyway, because he's like, you know, all he cares about is himself. He's like, I just need to be free of this curse. I think that he's just kind of like a familiar. So in the past of Leprechaun 2, I'm guessing he's more like a witch.
Yeah. So here's
it doesn't make any sense, but I'm just trying to make sense.
No, I like it. Yeah. I like it more than
here's
I thought,
something
which
that's
was just
worth. Here's something that's worth mentioning, by the way, because this is something that I couldn't stop thinking about last night while watching the movie. There are, I think, 8 or 9 Leprechaun movies. None of them are the same Leprechaun from the previous movie. Apparently, just the race of Leprechaun all looks like Warwick Davis.
Wait, they have different names in every single one of them? Or
I'm pretty sure. Like, there's no consistency to be found. It's not like Jason Voorhees coming back from the dead every single time. It's like if there were 9 Jason Voorhees.
Oh, no. Nope. Hey, Matt, just got to tell you, I'm going down the list. So, Lubdan the Leprechaun is from the original 1993 film. Okay. Now, let's go to... So, we know that Lubdan the Leprechaun is Leprechaun 2. Let's go to Leprechaun 3. Now, there has to be, like, a whole thing of, like, the whole... All the sequels. Leprechaun film series. Here we go. Man, Wikipedia is going to get my money this time, finally.
Leprechaun, you're gonna donate that $2.
Yeah, man.
Please, we're dying. We're dying, and we need you.
Nope. Lubdan the Leprechaun in 3. Leprechaun 4 in
space. Listen, they can give him as many names as they want, but every single movie has a completely different backstory. So maybe maybe it's multiverse.
Oh,
Leprechaun,
yeah. The multiverse. And I'm so shocked that we're like 9 minutes into this recording, and we haven't made any shitty Irish accents for anything.
No.
So
I was
far.
Look, I'm trying to be respectful to our Irish listeners for once.
Guys, I got a little something. If you subscribe to our Patreon, you can see I have a shot glass filled with what looks like whiskey, but it's actually just flat ginger ale, because that's literally what they put in the whiskey bottles in this movie. They didn't even go with the flat Coke. They went with the iced tea that they do in Mad Men. They just went with the flat ginger ale. So
it was truly
Aaron
the worst Irish whiskey.
But then also,
I saw something
since it's
green
Leprechaun 2.
Oh, yeah.
I have 2 drinks, and this is St. Fatty's Irish Red from Fatheads up in Cleveland.
I also have an Irish Red from Berkshire. I was wondering if we were going to both have a Guinness, but last time I think you had a Guinness and you didn't want it. But Taylor had something green. I saw
I think it's a Mountain Dew,
too.
Yeah. Am I doing this wrong? I had a Baja Blast Mountain Dew.
No, that's absolutely correct.
It's a Shamrock Shake Baja Blast Mountain Dew. Yes. I mean, it's close enough.
It's exactly as Irish as Warwick Davis's accent.
Yes.
In this movie.
And once again, I'm drinking chicken broth from a Your Jossum cup. So,
okay. Matt really, really did
Taylor,
not...
if you thought you lost, Matt really lost this one. You're a little bit closer.
He did not understand the assignment.
You know, for somebody who spent so much time in video stores, I can't believe this is your first Leprechaun movie. That just feels like...
I'm almost positive I saw the first or the third one at midnight on Cinemax in 19... Mm-hmm.
It was probably the third one, because there were boobies in that one. So yeah, that would be Cinemax for you. Yep.
Were there boobies in this one? Completely a different actress than
My favorite thing is that in the IMDb trivia, it said, like, there's a rumor that so-and-so used a body double. I'm like, what rumor? She's not shown in the same shot.
Siobhan Durkin?
Her role was almost given to the following people. First, it was written for Jennifer Aniston to come back from the first movie. There was a point where this was supposed to be a continuation, but she was busy with some little sitcom. Yeah.
No shot she was coming back.
Then they offered it to both Heather Langenkamp, who I think just was... She wasn't filming
horror at this point, right?
She was filming New Nightmare. She was too busy filming New Nightmare. And my favorite one was Denise Richards turned it down because she was filming Tammy and the T-Rex.
Siobhan is in Tammy and the T-Rex. Yeah. Which is... I don't even know how she could say... How is Denise Richards... gonna say
I think she had a little bit more screen time than Siobhan did in Tammy and the T-Rex.
I bet you at that the years that this came out, though, she was probably like, man, I should have taken Leprechaun 2. Like, there's probably at this in the moment, she was probably like, fuck.
The residuals for Tammy are probably way better now.
Well, by Leprechaun 3, this bombed so hard that this was the second and last theatrical release for a Leprechaun movie. It's been straight to DVD from this point on. Let's jump forward 1,000 years. And hey, it's Clint Howard, one of the biggest names in the movie.
Clint Howard, and his girlfriend is Kimmy Robertson.
Yeah,
also awesome. That was the best text on screen time jump I've ever seen. It's like 1,000 years later.
You're like, what? 1,000 years later, after that credit sequence where they're just going through illustrated women, how is he keeping tabs on this? I know he's magical, but
well, he had 1,000 years to keep track.
Yeah. So I also read this factoid on like 3 different things, which is insane to me. Did any of you read what the UK title for this movie is? Because it wasn't released as Leprechaun 2. Seems like what it should have been released as. It was released as One Wedding and a Lot of Funerals, which is...
That can't be true.
Matt, where did you read that?
That was on IMDb? Wikipedia and IMDb and a Google search.
Okay.
I need to find a poster of that.
I'm actually really impressed that you went through the rigmarole. That's Kyle's word of the week. Funerals.
That's the word for today.
Yeah.
Well, there's not even that many...
Yeah.
No,
there's five deaths. There's 5 deaths, and one of them is 1,000 years ago.
it's like literally the same ratio as 4 weddings and a funeral.
They should have just said one wedding and 4 funerals.
Right. Yeah, that would have been... Well, I guess they didn't want to spoil how many deaths were in the movie.
Not like anybody was going to be keeping count back in 1994.
You know, but I spoke out of turn because I said that Clint Howard was the biggest name in this movie. Completely forgetting that a pre-Mad TV Michael McDonald shows up
so
as the
weird.
Barista.
Such a wild scene.
I did a little bit of research on this because I was like, is this his first role? And I started looking into it. Did you know that Michael McDonald joined the Groundlings in 1992, and he was a Groundling from 92 to 97, and during that time, to make money, he wrote and directed films for Roger Corman, and that's why he's in, like, Carnosaur 2 and 3, and, like, he wrote and directed the Bucket of Blood remake from the 90s.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I was like, I had no clue.
No clue.
Because now he directs a lot of, like, sitcom television, but he's another one of the many directors working today that you can say got his start because of good old Roger Corman. But his death is, if not for another death in this movie, he has the most gnarly death. That him getting burned by all that steam is, like, an uncomfortable thing to watch.
Yeah.
It was such a fun, like, I feel like, hip coffee shops and espresso was a new thing early 90s. They're like, who's spending all this money on coffee, these assholes?
Yeah.
And they're like, what if they got their comeuppance with hot steam to the face?
Yeah.
I worked in a coffee shop after college, and those things are no joke.
Yeah.
There was a girl that I worked with who got third degree burns on her hand from one and had to go to the hospital and get like a mini cast for a month.
Dear God. Yeah, I feel like the 90s with like coffee shops was very similar to like the late 80s with sushi, where it was just like, what the hell is this?
This is weird.
Like, this newfangled thing that's been around for thousands of years in other cultures.
Yeah.
Let's but come
the thing Jennifer Aniston wasn't in it again. Central Perk would have been really fucked.
She's not that great of a waitress anyway.
Let's focus on back to the actual frame of the movie. I think that Bridget, the character of Bridget, is being a little bit unreasonable to our main character with how upset she is that he won't let his uncle drunk drive a limousine or hearse filled with human beings.
Well, he does say he has one rule, which is, you know, don't kill the paying customers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought there was no refunds.
There was a lot of one rules.
His first rule is no refunds. The second one is, yeah.
But
also Siobhan Durkin, the girl who plays Bridget, she is HMN royalty because she is the babysitter who gets electrocuted a year earlier in Ghost in the Machine.
Man, we've been talking about her a lot lately. All right.
I mean, we basically went through the vast majority of
her. Is she the same body double in that one?
She shows her boobs to some 12-year-olds, but she doesn't like show the audience.
Yeah.
Now, if you haven't watched that movie, that one is one of the ones that we just kind of like that bubbled up and shocked all of us. It's fantastic.
It's delightful. And I feel like it has a little bit in common with this movie in the sense of both of them start to dabble in a little bit of like a Nightmare on Elm Street type vibe, mm-hmm. because when the leprechaun makes the phone cord come to life to keep the main character from saying God bless you, I'm like, this is some Freddy Krueger shit right here. Yeah. And I'm all on board. Like, I'm all in on this.
You never have a problem with that.
I never will you find me complaining. I love that the leprechaun throughout this movie is just like, he's so gold obsessed that like he rips out the one dude's gold tooth, him tearing off that dude's finger to get the gold ring on his finger. I'm like, this is so good.
Amazing.
It's so amazing. Fantastic and goofy. But let's talk about the first actual kill out of these four kills that we
love
get it. When the leprechaun's so in good. 1990. Corny ass Ian. When we first meet this character, and he literally says to Bridget, oh, you're here. I have a special crash helmet for you. I was like, who's this nerd? Who invited the nerd?
Is that a word for a condom? What he means? A very special crash helmet.
And then he's just like, oh, you're here. I'm going to call out and force someone to come in on their day off so I can show you around my job. Like, he's at his job.
He's at the job. You can probably get away with it if you just keep being at your job.
Yeah. And if that wasn't bad enough, then, you know, we get a gentle sprinkling of SA on the car ride home.
But he deserves what he gets then. You know, that's the only way that it's worth killing. I mean, you know, I prefer when I don't feel bad about an asshole getting killed in a horror movie. And this one was pretty satisfying. That's why it's my favorite kill. Plus, it's also hilarious because the boobs, the nipples become the most unrealistic looking lawnmower blades. Have you ever seen lawnmower blades that look like that?
No, dude, that dude's lived in Los Angeles for all his life. He's never mowed a lawn. He's been in that apartment complex forever. And he's never had to mow a lawn. I would like to find that lawnmower. I mean, even the Dead Alive lawnmower was at least a little more like
a human one.
Yeah.
But it is great. I mean, I think that the idea of shooting that in shadow is just like chef's kiss. It's one of the few deaths where I'm like, yeah, I want this in my imagination more than physically seeing it because it's way worse however I'm imagining it than whatever you would show me.
Here's the thing. Like, imagine this. Imagine them making that scene in 2024. It would make people puke. Like, they would do it so well if they did it with like actual practical effects that you'd be like, well, I didn't want to see that. Like, I want to see the 1994 version of it where instead of just seeing Lubdan the leprechaun, gotta say it, you kind of like giggle like woohoo at the very end when the blood splatters on the wall. I'd also like to have seen the corpse like fall to the ground and just be like bleh, you know, like just a mannequin. I don't need to see the actual gore hit, but just like that would have been fun. But they probably took all the practical effects people that were going to do this movie and they did Tammy instead.
Yeah, that's fair.
need him over there.
I want to read two quick IMDb trivia factoids at this point, because both of them were confusing to me in different ways. So this one says, the production was temporarily shut down due to a series of bird attacks that greatly disturbed the cast and crew. Ornithologists were brought onto location to negotiate the terms with the bird community to cease the attacks.
Yeah, once those are union birds.
Once, this is my favorite sentence. Once a sense of peace was restored, production resumed.
Fuck. Matt, did you cross-reference this one? Because this one is even less believable
than this one. I did not cross-reference. But then this one I had to laugh at because it said that they made the leprechaun's outfit darker colors than the first movie to show that this was a darker movie than the cartoonish original. And I feel like this was way more cartoony
He's
than that
in
first
movie. Go-kart with a shamrock with like the circle and the bar through it.
Dude, his go-kart's pretty fantastic. That gave me a lot of joy when that came up.
I got the Halloween costume for the kiddo this year. That'd be sick.
We get a really, I still think this cameo is so perfect, is the Tony Cox cameo when he's in the bathroom and he just like the door opens, you hear the sounds of the feet coming, and then it's just Tony Cox standing there, who I found out, again, thank you IMDb trivia, was Warwick Davis's stunt double on the first movie. They became friends when they were doing the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi together, so they've like continued to keep each other employed one way or another.
Only 10 years before this movie. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
I guess it was 11 years.
That's insane that it was 10 years from Return of the Jedi to Leprechaun in Warwick Davis's career, with just a brief stop in Willowhood on the way. And then we get this very weird but kind of perfect Freaks reference.
I love that part.
All the little people are cheering on the leprechaun, yelling "One of Us" over and over and over again. I was like, that is... And then I realized that I knew the director's name, and suddenly all of this made sense, because this director then went on to make Idle Hands. And it's this dude gets it. He knows how to walk that perfect line of like slasher tropes, but like super meta, super tongue in cheek, lots of fun. It's kind of a bummer because you look at his career and, you know, we've talked about Idle Hands on the show before. Idle Hands just like unfortunately coming out so soon after the Columbine shooting kind of just like wrecked his career. And he pretty much did like television for 15 years until very recently. I think he did a movie or a doc or something to get himself back in there, but Idle Hands definitely put him in some form of director jail.
Did anybody
for
clock,
a really long time.
Clock who his nephew is? Robin Funder's nephew?
No, who's his nephew?
Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, no. Well, that may have helped. Maybe Timothy gave him a helping hand.
Yeah.
Timothy's a nepo baby. Rodman Flender put you on the map.
Quick shout out to some of the TV shows that he did make after Idle Hands kind of wrapped it all up for him. But he did some Tales from the Crypt episodes. He did some Gilmore Girls episodes, some OC episodes, The Office, Ugly Betty, Chicago Hope. And most importantly, he directed the episode The Scare of Dawson's Creek, which is the Scream parody episode of Dawson's Creek. He became really good friends with Conan O'Brien because they were friends from Harvard. They went to Harvard together. He's who directed the Conan O'Brien Can't Stop documentary about what happened to him after he lost The Tonight Show. And that kind of like reestablished him as a person that you could hire again after all that time. And Timothy Chalamet.
Really, I think that this is uncle. You know, this is the lizard people in Hollywood just trying to make a cover up, you know. Absolutely. But it is also quite interesting that, you know, we're talking about this director getting his feet wet again with a documentary, because, you know.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get there.
We're talking with a documentary.
Because our guest may have did the reverse of it. I do want to say that my favorite kill, the kill that I always think about with this movie, and even watching it now at 38, it is really a tough watch, is Morty. Morty, when he has to get up and open the safe and he's just like dragging this like stretched up stomach I was like, this I think was the first one I saw. I think it was playing on like USA one afternoon and I was watching it, and that was like one of those images where as a kid, I was just like, and no. And I like
that
changed
was,
the channel.
That's your Toxic Avenger 2
yeah.
intro scene for like yeah. in respect to me. Yeah, I got it. I get you.
It
yeah.
is gnarly. It's like the angles of the thing. Oh, just ooh,
it's a
ooh.
Great practical effect. Like yeah. it looks fantastic.
Oh yeah.
And it shouldn't and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be good. It should be no. it should be awful and it's
too good for this gnarly. Movie.
Well, because this movie also dabbles with like a really shitty skeleton puppet that is like, dude. Of course, my favorite shit.
Oh,
I was so excited.
Amazing.
That's my favorite scene, though, because yeah. Okay, so just so the listeners know, I need to be cast in a bad movie. And I realize what my calling in that bad movie is. I need to fight a skeleton. That's the life goal now. Bucket
Taylor,
list.
Taylor,
right
is there room for someone to fight a skeleton in Vampire?
I mean, there's always room for someone to fight a skeleton. You're going to have to provide your own skeleton.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually an incentive.
But
yeah. on the Indiegogo. Yeah.
But for the
fight your own skeleton.
For the man in the group that has only really seen this one, you really just need this in part three. The rest of this franchise is yeah. is a we've done yeah. four of these movies now, and I don't think we're doing any more of these movies.
Well, we did the first four, right? Like we
yeah,
haven't...
we did the first four. We, yeah.
We're not going to the hood or to
no.
the origins.
No. I don't think I three white YouTube. Guys can talk about Leprechaun in the Hood. I think that
after this movie last night, I was very curious and watched some YouTube, like, what is the Leprechaun franchise about? And watched clips from many of the others. And I got to say, In Space and In the Hood look like they're the most fun.
You like, think
I didn't
look
hate
be
in
wrong?
Space.
Insane.
Yeah, you'd think that Space was more fun than it is.
Yeah, it's fucking terrible.
It's I wouldn't say it's terrible, but it's definitely once you see that one, you're like, I don't need to go much further.
Well,
than
I just
this.
Saw the clip where he has a lightsaber or something, and I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah,
on a tiny green Yoda lightsaber.
Because
they don't care and there are no rules.
I've been mostly unimpressed when horror movies go to space in general.
Was Leprechaun the first to go franchise-wise to go to space?
No, Hellraiser, I think, went to space
first. The
first
to go to the hood, I think.
Yeah, he was definitely the first to go to the hood, unless you count Jason Takes Manhattan.
What about Tales from the Hood?
No, but like taking a classic franchise character
okay,
to the hood.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Are you really going to call the Leprechaun a classic franchise? You're just shit talking it, Matt.
Listen, anything that goes past four movies, I think, is crossed some level of classic to somebody. Mm. Like the Puppet Masters classic. Matt. There's 14 of them. I think.
Are there any Puppet Masters in space?
No. Aliens come and fight the Puppet Masters. It's slightly different.
Let's just say yes.
Yeah, tomato, tomato.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Now that we've sat through Leprechaun 2, some of us are going to have to save the night. I think I technically am taking the hit as the person who picks this one. So I'm going to take what I think is the best option. I'm going to pick another thing that involves a creature of small stature. It's a part two of a franchise. It also has a lovable drunk in it. I'm going with Ghoulies 2.
Nice choice. That is the kind of lateral thinking that we need on this show.
All right. Let's go to our guest real quick. What would, if you were like hosting a drive-in movie night or a movie, just a regular movie night at your house, and you had to come up with a double feature to play with Leprechaun 2, you know, anything that fits the vibe or the flow or whatever, what would you pick?
I have no idea. So you sprung this on me like,
yeah, Matt never tells the guests. We don't have,
I know.
I was like,
don't say never. We haven't had a guest in like 2 years.
Matt never tells the guests.
I do feel like this, this movie made me want to watch more Warwick Davis. Mm. So okay. I would either go Willow or Return of the Jedi, probably.
All right.
But I'm
Willow
more of a like,
fun.
That was, you know, we just watched that. So that was that. Now let's watch a movie.
Yeah, let's go watch an actual movie.
So I guess Willow would be real fun.
Willow, where, you can watch Willow first and then be like, and then things terrible happened to Willow and now he's a leprechaun.
Oh, I like that lore.
Yeah, things just went real bad after that one.
Yeah, all of a sudden he has a slave.
Yeah.
Right after Willow ends, he uses his magic for weird purposes.
Sounds about right.
All right, I'm going to go with, I think, the same thing I did last year, which is Darby O'Gill and Little People, but strictly due to the fact that this one actually is a better fit due to the fact that in Darby O'Gill and the Little People, Darby O'Gill gets King Brian drunk and then puts him in a rabbit sack. So it's basically the same
that
movie.
Feels, yeah, yeah. I like the traps here that are happening. I'm going to go with Bride of Chucky, another smaller creature of stature taking a bride. A little bit of Hollywood flair, it feels like, even though it's like maybe not quite Hollywood, but it feels Hollywood sheen. I'm going to go Bride of Chucky. Also, I'm sorry if anybody, my son's decided to drum, so I'm sorry that he's just a drum. Okay,
I couldn't,
good.
We
okay.
couldn't hear it.
Don't All right, worry,
fantastic.
We'll cut that
out. Just disregard that altogether.
All right, well. Some great double features there. And normally, here's where we do the What's Going On segment of the show. But we obviously have someone who's got an Indiegogo to promote. And you have been on a couple different productions of Matt Kelly podcasts.
Matt Kelly Productions.
Promoting this. And I have to say that on one of the episodes that you did, it was the first time that I actually heard that. And I'm so excited to say this in front of these two. So something that's going to set Vampire apart from, say, this Steamboat Willie movie that's coming out or this Winnie the Pooh movie coming out is that it's in Who Framed Roger Rabbit style of live action actors dealing with a 2D hand animated killer deer.
What?
That might be why you need an Indiegogo campaign to get some finishing budget costs on this movie. So how about you tell us about Vampire and your Indiegogo campaign?
Yeah, Vampire is a public domain horror adaptation, as the kids do these days, except that it was already a script about a killer deer monster, and we're shoehorning that part in. That's not important. Don't worry about that. What's cool about it is, you know, we're obviously operating on a low budget, and we did as many practical effects as we could, but we couldn't quite wrap our heads around how to do animals, like, short of just really bad puppets. And so, you know, it's not a Disney adaptation. It has ties to Disney that are legally not anything to worry about. and so it dawned on us to do animated animal, like creatures, but there's friendly animals as well. And there are just a lot of animals in the woods when you're doing a creature feature. And so we started working with an animator and we shot our horror movie in the woods with a lot of, you know, people acting with a little stuffed animal across from them that is going to be, you know, a bear or a deer or a other creature that has yet to be determined. But it's really exciting. I've never done anything like that before, although we did have some mixed media animation in the Ska documentary.
Yep.
Where people, you know, people interacted with Ska cartoons. Ska-tunes?
Ska-tunes.
Scotch. I'll show myself out.
Scotches.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be rad. It's a throwback 90s horror movie, loosely based on the book that Bambi is based on. And it's, you know, attractive people go into the woods looking for stuff and find chaos.
Right. Attractive people, you say?
You have to. It's college kids, you know.
All right. All right.
So if people are listening right now and they want to donate to that Indiegogo campaign, do you have a quick, easy URL for them to use?
Vampiremovie.com.
That is easy. Oh, yeah.
That's too easy. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna donate twice.
Amazing.
That's amazing. That sounds so. So it's shot, but the animation and the post stuff is what we're.
Yeah, it's mostly shot. Principle is pretty much done, but we have a few scenes. Obviously, there's pickups. You know, more animation, background plates to film, things like that. Yeah. But the bulk of it is shot because you have to do that to get the animation going. So we're still, right. I'd say we're like halfway through making the movie.
Yeah.
But we shot, you know, our actors are done for the most part, except for some voice stuff. And you know, we've got to edit it. We've got to do color grading. We're going to try to get some 90s music for the soundtrack, stuff like that. But mostly it's animation that's still left to happen. So I've seen most of the movie. I love it, but I'm like, oh, the cartoons are missing. It's weird.
Right. Where are the cartoons at? And that's awesome.
I'm kind of curious because I don't think I've actually asked you this yet, but I know you obviously for documentaries like Pick It Up and The Last Blockbuster, and you've got this Lost documentary that's on the horizon. Is this your first feature, or have you done features prior to this?
This is my first narrative feature. I've done a bunch of shorts, you know, like horror shorts and other, like, just for... I like to go to film festivals, and because I'm like a DIY film guy, it's cheaper to make a short than it is to pay to get into, like, costs like $300 to go to a film festival, or I can make a film for $300 and get into 10 festivals. And not, a really weird life hack that's very specific.
You're giving away Kyle's tricks of the trade.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, I didn't share this with anybody either, but now we're in cahoots. But yes, it's very helpful.
It's a fun... pro tip. I mean, the shorts have to be good enough to get into festivals, I guess. Right. That's the only barrier
it's the,
entry.
It's the only catch.
But yeah. But this is my first scripted feature. And as you mentioned, I do have another documentary that I'm doing right now about the TV show Lost that is also still on Indiegogo. GettingLostDoc.com will get you there.
Nice. All right. Well, the last chunk of this episode is obviously promoting what we've been reading, listening to, watching that we've really enjoyed that we want to tell other people about. And since this was my pick, I guess I'll start. I read a really cool graphic novel called Where Monsters Lie by Kyle Starks. And it's hard to get into too much because clearly what I have is like just the first half of what will be a much bigger story. But it starts off with a group of three teens running from a house, and they bang on a door of an old lady, and they're like, this guy's had us locked in his basement. He's been torturing us with a bunch of puzzles. Like, call the police right away. And she's like, my neighbor did that? And they said, yeah. And then all of a sudden she shoots them in the face. And you find out that this entire neighborhood is like a safe haven for serial killers. And she's like the little old lady that keeps the peace. But one of those kids escapes and doesn't die and tells the police about it. So the whole graphic novel is like, just imagine like a small town police department descending into a street where like Jason Voorhees, Leatherface, Freddy Krueger, Pinhead, and like Jigsaw all just happen to reside and are like working as one giant team of superhuman killers. Highly recommend. It was a fun little read. Again, you're the guest. We'll jump over to you next there, Taylor.
Yeah, and again, 15 minutes heads up on this one too. I have not been consuming that much media lately, and the only thing that springs to mind is unfortunate because I'm one of the 10 people that went out and saw Madam Web.
Oh, did they give you a popcorn bucket too?
No. No, but there is one, which is wild because they had to have known. Like, the production costs on the popcorn bucket vastly exceeded the ticket sales of this
film.
Sure. And I had a lot of fun watching it.
I'm told it's like the Room of superhero movies.
It is like the Room of superhero. By the way, Greg Sestero from The Room in Vampire.
Oh,
nice.
Let's go.
I didn't know. We do have some fun cameos and fun celebrities. Lloyd
love
Kaufman's
that.
In it.
Uncle Lloyd.
Uncle Lloyd. But yeah, it is like the Room of superhero movies, if you can call it a superhero movie, because there are no superheroes in it. It's wild, and it was an okay time at the theater. I think it wouldn't be as fun at home, so go out and
I can't say too much. I haven't talked to them about this yet, but Geekscape has a good relationship with the guys who wrote Madam Web, who also happened to write Morbius. But they also wrote the Lost in Space movie or TV series for Netflix that was like incredible. And I think you were there. We were talking to them about it, and they were like, yeah, working with Netflix and working with Sony are two completely different worlds. And it was basically that Netflix gave them free reign to like travel their deepest desires, and Sony was just nonstop micromanagement from the jump. Yeah. And it's kind of frustrating because you know that these are the guys who are going to like have trouble getting work.
They're going to take down the for it. Yeah.
Down the line.
But it's very clear. Like if you watched the movie, and I'm loosely using that term, it's very clear that what they're showing in theaters is not what anybody wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, like, definitely written by.
I do not blame the writers for what happened.
Which I think was the case when we talked about Morbius. There's like, I think they said there's like three lines in that movie that they have recollection of writing. They're like, whatever we saw in this, because they also wrote the Power Rangers movie with Elizabeth Banks, and that was pretty good.
It was very cheesy, and it worked. The cheese was the flavor, you know?
Yeah. And they're like, they've been on Geekscape a lot because they know their comic book shit. So it's like frustrating that they're bringing in people who clearly know the source material. And then telling them how to write the script, and it's like just let them do what you've hired them for, y'all. All right. Well, I might try to see that this weekend out of curiosity before the opportunity to see it in a theater is taken away from me. But I'm making Poor Things my top priority, though. I really want to try to see all the Oscar movies, and that specifically has me really excited.
That one was great. That's what I should have said.
Well, look, you got a twofer there as well.
Yeah,
so.
You got a twofer. Perfect. How about you, Scott?
I can't really say anything about it because it would be very spoilery. We finished the most recent season of True Detective, Night Country, last night. People that listened to whatever episode it was where I mentioned that we'd started watching this season, I didn't watch the first three seasons. It's fine because they're not truly interconnected. I fucking loved this. And there are reasons why I think that the hardcore True Detective people really are upset about it. I think because they expect a cop procedural, and this is not a cop procedural. This is existential horror. And I fucking loved it. It was so good. It felt like when I read Annihilation, not when I watched Annihilation, the film. Not saying that I don't enjoy Annihilation, the film. It's just that the book is way better. They're different beasts, but they're both good. Night Country was so good. I'll be the first person to sing its praises. I think that did something different this season than they've done in the last three seasons, from what I've gathered and what people are bitching about. And it works for me. I'm not saying that it would work for everybody, and I don't think that it would work for a lot of the people that are deep into True Detective, but I think it was a really cool season.
All right. And Kyle?
I'm just actively watching the new RuPaul's Drag Race season as it comes out, which is something that I think oftentimes – my wife and I fall behind, and we're watching three episodes.
To watch it, and then you told me that it was like eight episodes in, and I was like, I'm probably not going to watch it.
Yeah, which is
episodes in 1 week to get caught up to like where it's at, I'm like already tapped out.
My algorithm doesn't spoil anything for me anymore. You know what I mean? Like I don't, I'm not like following a bunch of queens or
I don't even know who the contestants
anymore.
Are.
Right. So
this is wild for Matt Kelly.
The past couple seasons have been a little disappointing for me. I think it's like you sort of start to see, behind the curtain a little bit, and Rue is just not the best person altogether. So it's once you. So I needed a break. I did. I think I needed a break, and I've jumped back into the season, which was a little slow going. They tried to throw a bunch of like wonky, like there's a Netflix The Circle type thing that happens at the first two episodes of the show, which is a split premiere, and it's so once
I'm
you
so
get
over
past
the split premieres, they need to stop that shit.
Fucking nightmare.
Drag Race.
once you get past that stuff, and once you get a little bit into some of the stories, and not fully planted stories, because there's that, but like actually some of like the queens attempting to adjust and pivot their themselves and their looks, the stuff that I think I really liked in those late single digits, like early double digit seasons of Drag Race, that feels like it's coming back in some capacity. This most recent episode that I watched, they did the Rusicle, which was a fun reimagining of The Sound of Music, and which was fucking crazy. It's great. I really enjoy watching it when I don't see all the seams and, you know, all the shit that they have done to, like, really, really build it. Once I can look past that or through it or ignore it even, then I enjoy myself. And I've been enjoying most of the season.
Okay, perfect. Well, guys, it was a great St. Patrick's Day here at Horror Movie Night. And we'll be back next week past our St. Patty's Day. We'll come back stronger and better than ever. But before you leave, make sure that you go over to vampiremovie.com. Make some donations. I know that I want to see this 2D animation meets live action actor horror in the woods film just as much as any of you. So let's get those donations rolling in. Donate while the campaign is running. And we'll be back next week with more Horror Movie Night.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm. Available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.